Shabbat Shalom. History was made this week as we witnessed Hillary Rodham Clinton get the nomination. Many of us wept, poured champagne, called our mothers, and called our daughters. For those of us who have been following Hillary's career, this may have seemed like an inevitable progression, but we need to acknowledge the immensity of this historical moment, that in 2016, we have shattered the glass ceiling. Here I am, a woman rabbi, and this profession has only been permitted to me because 44 years ago, Sally Priesand broke the glass ceiling. And only in 1920 was the 19th Amendment adopted, giving women the right to vote. And now, just shy of 100 years later, it is astounding, almost a miracle, that a major political party has nominated a woman for president. Now that the glass ceiling has been broken, girls and women can really embrace the fact that they can become anything, even president. But like with all historical narratives, things aren't so simple. On the other side of the aisle, we can see a regressive narrative for women. In a recent New York Times op-ed called "Why Men Want to Marry Melanias and Raise Ivankas," Jill Filipovic writes, "In our reluctantly feminist America, one question this election poses is whether we've evolved enough to value women as individuals instead of assessing them relationally, as an attractive wife supporting her husband, or as a high-achieving daughter reflecting flattering light back on her parents." So on the one hand, in a breathtakingly short period of time, women have entered into areas of professional achievement that were previously unobtainable. That I'm standing before you now as one of your rabbis exemplifies this. And yet, I am disappointed by the double standard that still exists. We've seen this before. It's as pervasive as our oldest stories. In fact, we see a parallel to this situation in an episode in this week's Torah portion, in which women are given rights that were previously denied to them. Here's the setup. The Israelites are on their way to Canaan, and they take a second census. They are so close to the promised land now that they're already talking about how it will be divided. The census takes account of all the male heads of households. And God tells Moses that each tribe would be appointed a portion of the promised land, and that this land would be an inheritance passed from father to son. A group of five sisters, Mala, Noah, Hogla, Milcha, and Tirza, collectively known as the daughters of Zelophehad, present a challenge to the system of land division. They approach Moses to ask that the land that would have been given to their deceased father be given to them, lest it be lost to their clan forever, as Zelophehad had no sons. Instead of answering them directly, Moses turns to God to ask for counsel. In a show of emphatic support, God answers, "The daughters of Zelophehad speak justly," or "rightly the daughters of Zelophehad speak. You shall give them a hereditary holding among their father's kinsmen." And if it weren't abundantly clear, God reiterates, "Transfer their father's share to them." And furthermore, God takes the opportunity for this example to determine law for the future. God says, "To the Israelites you shall say, if a man dies and he has no son, you shall cause his inheritance to pass to his daughter. This shall remain for Israel as a legal norm." And with this, the law is changed permanently. In a sense, This is amazing. We see that God, in partnership with people, expanded legal formulation and made amendments. Furthermore, we can see that the ownership of this process was open to all people, not just some elite class, but in this case, what would have been considered one of the most powerless class of people, orphaned women. They were listened to, and they made an impact on law. This story of the daughters of Zelophehad is one of only four times when God weighs in on a legal ruling between people in the Torah. When considering that there are hundreds of laws in the Torah, we must ask, why does God weigh in here? God weighs in so that there would be no controversy. The Israelites might have rigidly clung to the idea that the land would only pass to sons, even if it meant losing an entire clan's inheritance, were there no sons. They might have felt that there was only one way to observe the law, rather than to have allowed it to expand as it is applied to real-life situations that demand it. The daughters of Zelophehad show that the spirit of the law is more important than the letter of the law, and that in a living, breathing, constantly changing world, we must let the values and ethics that laws are intended to support be the guide. So there's a lot to celebrate about this episode in the Torah. Justice and fairness prevail. Women are given land, which gives them the potential to sustain themselves without the support of a husband or father. The daughters provide a model of what the rabbis considered to be exemplary of virtuous women. They used their intelligence to choose the most opportune moment to plead their case. They waited until all the land was being allotted and made their case in the most public forum. They are admired for their knowledge of Jewish law, and they are respected for their astuteness. A colleague of mine, Jason Navarez, shared that they also provided an effective model for social change. The daughters demonstrated how a shared vision and a sensible approach and a demonstration of evidence could bring about a positive outcome. Now, this all made sense if a woman who inherited land did not marry, as she would be permitted to own the property outright. But for women who got married, it wasn't so simple. Married women functioned as mere placeholders, passing down an inheritance from their fathers to their husbands and sons. After the law was given that the daughters could inherit their father's land, the leaders from the tribe Manasseh, the tribe to which the daughters belonged, challenged it and added a clause that stated that if a daughter inherited land, that daughter must marry within the tribe of Manasseh, so that the land would ultimately pass to her husband and stay in the tribe. So while the daughters of Zelophehad represented a shattering of a glass ceiling of sorts, the narrative about the status of women was complicated. Many read the story of the daughters of Zelophehad as a feminist text, but no story is severed from its historical context. We are always challenged to keep two realities alive at the same time. So while on the one hand, the daughters of Zelophehad helped effect significant change to the law and empower women, on the other, they live in a certain historical time and place in which women did not have full status. And now, Hillary Rodham Clinton has shattered a glass ceiling that changes the American landscape forever going forward. Yet, on the other side of the aisle, old gender stereotypes prevail. But still, I celebrate this historic moment. While we have more work to do for equality, we have reached a major milestone and are further towards that goal than ever before. After Hillary Clinton was nominated in her acceptance speech, she said, "Tonight, we've reached a milestone in our nation's march towards a more perfect union. The first time that a major party has nominated a woman for president. Standing here as my mother's daughter and my daughter's mother, I am so happy this day has come, happy for grandmothers and little girls and everyone in between. Happy for boys and men too, because when any barrier falls in America, for anyone, it clears the way for everyone. When there are no ceilings, the sky's the limit. On this Shabbat, may we wonder about possibilities. Let us consider a future for our children and realize that our choices matter. May our children's inheritance be equality, compassion, strength, justice, and peace. Shabbat Shalom.